Hey, it's Kyle Meredith, host of the Kyle Meredith With podcast, presented by WFPK at WFPK.org and the Consequence Podcast Network. It's a series that puts the spotlight on iconic musicians and actors, inviting them to drop by and talk about their latest projects, whether it's albums, TV shows, films, or beyond.
I'm going to say something I don't want to say. Here it goes. Without Spinal Tap, there is no Tenacious D.
Whoa. Man.
We get great stories and the biggest scoops from people like Garbage's Shirley Manson, the 1975's Matty Healy, Jack Black and Kyle Gass of Tenacious D, Maya Hawke, Kiefer Sutherland, and everyone in between. New episodes arrive every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. You can find Kyle Meredith With on the Consequence Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mother's Bathroom Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from Counting Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season four. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcasts and join me for the story behind the song.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to Going There, the crossroads where music and mental health meet. This season of Going There is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson, who believes that health is everything. Their strength in healthcare innovation empowers them to build a world where complex diseases are prevented, treated, and cured, where treatments are smarter and less invasive, and solutions are personal. Through their expertise in innovative medicine and medtech, they are uniquely positioned to innovate across the full spectrum of healthcare solutions today, to deliver the breakthroughs of tomorrow and profoundly impact health for humanity. Learn more at www.jnj.com, at Janssen US, and at JNJINNOVMED on Twitter. Today we are talking with singer-songwriter-musician Peter Martin, also known as Petey USA. You may know Petey USA from the songs Don't Tell the Boys and Model Train Town. Petey USA's music has been described as catchy and effervescent, with vulnerable, pure, and relatable energy. Petey USA has a new album out called The Yips, including the title track by the same name. Petey USA will be playing a couple of shows in late August, including August 30th at Joan C. Edwards Stadium, supporting Zach Bryan, and then starting a North American tour in late September, including Furnace Fest in Alabama in October. Check out Petey USA's music, tour info, and merch at petey'swebsite.com. Now, on the Going There podcast, we have the tough conversations to address important issues so we can learn from each other, challenge the stigma of mental illness, and get the care we need. And one issue that we have never talked about directly on this podcast is the concept of the yips. Now, as far as I know, the yips is mainly a golf term, referring to a sudden and unexplained loss of the ability to execute certain skills. For example, those of us who are golfers may have worked on our swing for years and really feel like we have it down and practiced and fluid. But suddenly, our swing just doesn't work. And when we get the yips while playing in front of others, we can feel confused, stressed, and embarrassed. Now, I don't really play golf, but I think many of us can relate to the concept of the yips in our mental health journey. Sometimes our mood can be okay for a while. We're having constructive thoughts and behaving in ways that are moving our life forward in a productive way. And seemingly out of nowhere, something takes us out of that good zone. We wake up anxious or depressed, or get a panic attack in situations that used to feel manageable to us. Or we feel that we have worked hard to maintain and manage our sobriety, and suddenly we have a lapse that we can't immediately explain. And Pete talks about how he has experienced depression and anxiety and how he feels that his thinking has given him the yips or created barriers that he needed to overcome. Now, as we progress through this season of Going There, our goal is to bring you, the audience, further into the conversation. We'd love to hear your feedback, questions you have that have been sparked by our conversations with these incredible artists, and topics you'd love to see addressed. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. These help other folks find their way into the conversation so they can go there with us. So let's go there and listen to what Pete has to say. Hey, Pete, welcome to Going There.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about the concept of the yips, which up until recently I have heard only in the context of golf. So tell me what that concept is to you.
Yeah, the concept is, it was popularized in golf, but it's kind of carried over into like kind of like all sports. And it's just sort of like a moment where you just cognitively, something that you've been able to do your entire life, it just stops clicking and you just sort of lose it, whatever it is. And it's just sort of like, I think it's like the definition of just sort of getting in your own way and your brain being the thing that is causing you to struggle. And it's, you know, kind of terrifying. So I was just like applying that to real life instead of just sports when I was thinking about writing the album.
So let's talk about how that has played out in real life for you. Because I, this is a super interesting concept to me, because I do think that when we have what we might refer to as episodes involving our mental health, it has that same vibe. It's just like, we're going. And then something's just not working.
Yeah, I think I've been through periods of depression before, periods of just like not being able to figure it out that, you know, have lasted like 4 or 5 years. And for me, I had all the resources at my disposal to be able to figure it out. Like, I'm a really lucky guy. I'm a pretty privileged guy, relatively speaking. So looking back on it, the only thing that I could really point to getting in the way of me being able to succeed or find happiness or whatever that might look like, it's all been self-inflicted, you know? It's kind of like I really struggle with getting in my own way. And looking back, some of the stuff that I felt like was really holding me back, that I would, you know, in the thick of it, tend to blame on other outside factors. Looking back from the other side of it, I'm just like, wow, all that stuff was really, really constructed and just sort of made up. But when I was in it, it was just like, you know, it was so real, you know. So that's kind of what I think about. And I always like have a lot of anxiety about like returning to a place like that. Because when you're in it, you just kind of like don't know. You don't know that you're just kind of like making all this stuff up, if that makes sense.
Well, tell me about, if you're okay with it, about the depressive episodes. It's not generally how I tend to see things, actually. Like, I don't generally tend to see it that people will make things up. You know what I mean? Like, it's generally a thing where there's a logic to it, but you haven't figured out what it is yet. But I'm open to, if there was something that you felt like was made up, I'd love to hear kind of what you feel like was the origin of the depression and what you discovered.
Well, I think I was just like, I had an idea of myself and what I was capable of. And so I would create sort of like false feelings and sort of false barriers, probably as a method to deal with anxiety. And I would just tell myself like, well, this is impossible. Well, I can't do this. So people like me can't do this. People like me can't sort of achieve these things. And to me, looking back on it, they were just like constructed barriers to be comfortable. Like I needed to like know my place, and I needed to like tell myself what my place was in order to, as a way to relieve myself of, I guess, like existential anxiety or like self-worth issues. I would kind of be like, this is my place. This is where I am. And I'm not going to evolve beyond this because I can't. And that's impossible. So kind of stuff like that. A lot of self-talk like that.
Can we talk about, if you're, again, whatever you're comfortable with, what it was that you were aspiring to be, and what were the barriers, especially the idea of, okay, you know, why should you stay in your place, whatever that means?
What I was aspiring to be was just a fully functional, responsible, and just sort of like self-sustaining adult. entity that took care of himself and could provide for himself and one day a family, sort of like in the traditional like masculinity sense. That was it. Yeah, because in my mind, I just didn't feel really capable of accomplishing that.
So are you okay with talking about what parts of that felt more problematic? And what did you discover you felt like was, you know, some kind of made up barrier?
Well, the made up barrier was just like I absolutely am capable of providing myself for myself financially and like holding down a job and like being good at a job. And I had no real reason to think otherwise. So it all seemed constructed, you know. It all seemed like something I would just tell myself to maybe, I don't know what it was, maybe just soften the blow when things didn't work out. Or I just always felt kind of dumb, and so I just kind of like latched on to that identity as something that, just like looking ahead, it was like, well, I am where I am in my life because I'm dumb, and this is just like how things happen, and everything's in its right place type of thing. Like that was important for me to feel.
Yeah, I find it very difficult. Aspirations and hope can be very difficult because when we have negative thoughts, there's this little choice point, because to some degree, if they were true, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so for example, like let's say that somebody was dumb or somebody was incapable of doing certain things.
Mm-hmm.
You would want to organize around in terms of like, okay, well now what? You know, now what do I do given that? How do I survive? How do I live my life? Mm-hmm. And so there is this moment where people are kind of questioning, okay, how seriously should I take this thought, this threat? Because there are times when we have these thoughts, you know, like let's take something a little more extreme. It's like I'm driving and there's a train coming. And I think, well, I'm not going to make it past this train, so I should probably slow down and stop mm-hmm. and let the train go. And so mm-hmm. there's those thoughts where it's sort of like, okay, that actually helped. And then there's other thoughts where we think to ourselves, well, that's self-limiting, but is it limiting in a way that will direct me in another direction? And I find it very difficult to know whether or not, like, it's like, how do we listen to our negative thoughts? How do we listen to our limiting thoughts, if you will?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really know what it was. I think the train, in this scenario was just like me just accepting that I was like never going to be able to have a job that required like real skill. And so I sort of resigned to staying on the side of the train tracks where I would just like work jobs that really didn't require any skill and didn't pay very well. And so it's just like, if I could just get health insurance, if I could just get this base level of like safety, then I had accomplished all that I was capable of. And I could just stay there. And that was just going to kind of be my zone. Yeah.
That word that you use, the safety, I think that's so important because to some degree, if you are going to say, okay, I'm going to come out of my comfort zone,
mm-hmm.
we still have those safety needs. We still have that part of us that's saying, but wait a minute, you know, what about the health insurance? What about the comfort? You know, if you build in this area, you'll get farther than going out and in theory failing in another area. And so I'm very curious, how did you kind of make that decision? Like, how did you understand, well, I have these safety needs. There may be some circumstances in which safety needs feel more relevant. But here I'm saying, no, I'm not going to listen to my safety needs.
Well, as I got older and as I became more aware of how much annual income it required to feel safe as life progressed, I guess, sort of becoming consciously aware of just like as a 23-year-old health-wise and just lifestyle wise. I mean, you can like eat like shit as a 23-year-old. You can drink alcohol. You can not work out and stuff. And your body will feel like relatively okay. And then I think that like becoming aware of like as you get older, as you go through life, as you get injured, as the people that maybe you're dependent on become older and have needs of their own, it requires you to kind of get your shit together a little bit more and think about things. I mean, my world just started opening up year after year and staring down the barrel, just being like, okay, making this little money 10, 20 years down the road is not going to feel as safe as it feels now, if that makes sense. As life keeps happening, as extraneous factors inevitably happen with the passing of time. I have to sort of like make the what now feels like an irresponsible, maybe unsafe decision, maybe take a risk to get out of this kind of faux safety net and venture out into the void and hopefully be rewarded for it, if that makes sense, and ultimately set myself up for success later in life.
Yeah, and so it does make sense. And I think that that's one of the things that people struggle with oftentimes when they have safety behavior. So let's take a range of things that people feel makes them safe. Like the for example, being agoraphobic, like not going out because of fear of panic.
Right.
That does protect one from the negative consequences of panic. If you're at home, you are in fact less likely to panic, and the consequences of that panic is less. You know, fear of flying, if you are less likely to have some kind of horrible accident if you are not flying as opposed to being in your apartment. Although statistically, I don't even know if that's true, but let's say for a moment that that was. But the question really is, but is that keeping us safe holistically?
Right.
And one of the things that you're saying here is that, well, it's keeping me safe on one level, but I'm not actually safe because my life is going to be much smaller to some degree.
Sure. And what are the negative health consequences or negative externalities of staying in your house forever, you know? Or what are the negative externalities of not leaving your house? I mean, there's some really, really gnarly stuff that comes from not getting sunlight, not getting proper nutrition, not exercising. So it really just kind of like comes around on the other end, and the safety behavior can really bite you in the ass. What are the negative externalities of not being socialized, not knowing how to talk to people, not knowing how to express your wants and needs? And that can show up even like in the doctor's office, or like not being able to know, I don't know, not being able to get to know your body and how it interacts with the world can actually be dangerous in the long term. So it is kind of paradoxical in that way. Just becoming aware of that was pretty huge.
So the way I hear what you're saying, and tell me if you feel like this is a reframe, because I don't hear as much that it was just made up, right? Mm-hmm. Like it was more, it wasn't vetted, you know? So the idea of a safety plan to me is not made up. And quite frankly, the idea of a quote unquote safe job, especially if you haven't done the math on the numbers, as opposed to, I'm assuming we're talking about a career in music. That was the contrast.
The contrast was what I'm doing right now isn't working. I see no way out of it. What are my skills? I mean, the career in music was not my goal, and it was not my hopes and dreams, and it was not my North Star. It was a skill that I knew that I had.
So this is interesting to me because obviously you've had so much success in music. So let's talk about, if music was not your North Star, your dream, what was?
I didn't know. And that was sort of informing the, I think the barriers that I
was constructed. I mean, it's just like the through line throughout this entire experience was just confusion. And I had that confusion since I was in high school, since I was put into the like regular system of like, you go to school, you go to college, and you go to college and you get a job. I was confused straight out of the bat. I had always played music. I had always been told that I was good at music. And what's so funny is that becoming a professional musician is the ultimate, like, don't quit your day job thing. You have dreams, lofty dreams of being a rock star. Okay, yada, 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 yada. I roll this, I roll that. It was really funny because it wasn't my dream, but I was just sitting there in like a basement of a corporate office being like, fuck, I got to try something new. I guess I'll just like write some fucking songs. And that was actually the thing that got me out of it. And I'm as shocked as anyone else, you know? But it is really funny to actually do the riskiest thing to get out of the safety thing and be in a much safer position now than I was back then.
But, you know, the thing that I often think about is sometimes if we go back to the concept of the yips, sometimes we have the yips or we're confused or we don't understand something about ourselves. It winds up being something of a placeholder. It's saying, look, slow down for a minute. Something's not right. So like, for example, what I'm hearing, you tell me if I'm hearing it wrong, is that you're going along. It sounds like you're tracking along with the more traditional path.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're doing the school, you're doing the job, you're doing the safe thing. And then at some point, and you don't really know because you didn't make necessarily like a conscious decision at that point, but just something's grinding to a halt. Your body and your mind are kind of saying to you, look, I don't know why, but stop.
Yeah.
And it sounds to me like what you did was you listened to that and you sorted out. It's like we're basically saying, listen, you're stopping me because the thing that I have been told was safe my whole life, the thing that I was told was going to get me, before you do this for 30 years and figure it out, your body and mind are saying, like, take a minute. Mm-hmm. Is this really safe? Is this really the best thing? Or is the safety for you in following more your authentic path? Is it in the thriving? And I feel like that's what you came out with. It wasn't necessarily that, and again, tell me if I'm wrong about this because it's obviously your experience, but that it wasn't necessarily that it was all made up. It was more that you discovered that there was a path that was being fed to you that were like, that's not my path.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think if I could get like trippy about it,
let's get trippy. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're doing it.
I sort of, you know, I have this sort of prevailing thought and have had this since maybe I was like 16 years old of pretty intense determinism. Sort of informed by the fact that when we're born, we have, you know, an origin thought, right? We have our first thought that's a reaction to whatever stimuli that we're feeling in that moment, in our first moments of life. Maybe it started before we're born, but each thought then informs a reaction, then informs a stimuli, then another thought. And so we're on this sort of like chain reaction of thought reaction since the day that we're born. And I do feel that our brains are sort of their own autonomous beings and our bodies are just like a vessel for them. And in that sense, like, I do believe somewhat, you know, given, I do believe that we're determined superficially because obviously I'm an idiot and I don't know anything. But when I was in sort of this rut and I had these labels for myself and these conditions for myself. I don't like that I feel this way. And I don't like that I feel that we're determined. So often there are moments in life where I'm just like, I am going to go against my programming. Whatever I think that I ought to do, I'm going to do the opposite. I think there's a Seinfeld episode about that when George does this, but I was just like, I'm going to do the thing that I ought to not do. And in this case, it was literally just like parting with $300 that I didn't feel safe or comfortable parting from. It was a really, really, really big deal to me. You know, I had this moment of rock bottom, which is why I think that rock bottom is so important. I feel really bad for people who are struggling that don't get to experience it. To basically be like, I'm going to part with $300. I'm going to go against my programming. And that was the first thing that I could point to that that changed my life in a positive direction. And I've been sort of riding that wave, and not to say smoothly or euphorically or anything, but just realistically riding this wave in a positive, very manageable trajectory ever since.
But if I could take what you're saying and use you as a counterexample, it almost feels like there's a little bit of a Matrix quality to it, because it's it's not necessarily determinism. It's more saying determinism will be your path if you don't stop and consider it every so often. And if something's not feeling right, you know, as long as it's not dangerous and it's not, you know, you might want to just do what you said, which I think is really, really interesting. Just try a thing different. Just try something different. Like if you feel like you're in a rut, you feel like, look, this is just, I got no options here. This is the way my life's going to be. Just think of something. You could, like, is there anything that you can change just a little bit? And just kind of see, because I think the idea simply that one can change anything.
Yeah.
I mean, because when you're depressed or you're anxious, everything is telling you nothing's going to change. There's no hope. And so I think the fact that you did that is almost the counter argument to determinism. It's more like if you are not, if you don't to some degree challenge, if you want to call it your programming or whatever, determinism will take hold. But you kind of showed that there was a path, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my only argument for the determinism thing is obviously there was a set of thoughts and circumstances and actions lifelong that led me to the moment where, you know, my programming was like, this ain't it. I'm going to do something totally different. And so if I'm looking at a snapshot of my whole life as like a drawing of like lines and stuff, that was the point in the drawing where it just kind of made a sharp jab to the left.
But here's the thing that I think a lot of people go through, which is, let's just say hypothetically, that what you were doing initially was saying, okay, I'm going with this. I mean, I've been fed, again, things tend to be traditional because they at least sometimes work for people, you know, like there is something to be said for, you know, color within the lines. Like there's, you know, do the things that historically have worked for people, get the education, get the job, whatever.
Yeah.
And so to me, the way it sounds is that you, if you want to frame it this way, excuse me, in like a good faith effort, said, all right, I'll do it. You know, like other people are telling me I should do it. People around me are doing it. I'll do it. And then at some point you're just like, yeah, no. It's not, but would you have known that if you didn't, again, it, what sounded to me like was a good faith effort to try to make it happen, you know, like, would you have been able to know, listen, I have tried this and in this world, I think I'm dumb. I think I'm limited and I'm not going to get very far, but would you have been able to say that if you didn't know that I had actually tried this path?
Yeah, try is a funny word for this, because it seems like where I was at was the sort of culmination of not trying, sort of like anti-decision making, so plagued with indecision that I'm just not going to make any of them. And the job that I had and the position that I was in was literally a job that was, I didn't have to really apply or even interview for, because it was like, are you sure you want to do this type thing? We need someone to just sit here for 12 hours. Is that you? And I was kind of like, yeah. So good faith effort to try to fit in doesn't feel like the right terminology. It sort of feels like, I guess, like bad faith effort. bad faith, no effort to not try anything, kind of.
So you didn't feel like, listen, you guys have said do X, Y, and Z and there'll be success. You're more like, I'm going to do, for lack of a better way of saying it, the least I have to do on that path.
Because I have no idea what the fuck I want to do. No idea. Yeah. Literally no idea. And on top of that, I don't feel capable of doing anything, even if I wanted to. And maybe that was informing me, my lack of motivation to figure that out.
Where did you come up with that theory, if you don't mind me asking, the idea that you're not capable of doing anything?
I don't know. I think I was born with it. I think it's just, again, I think it's in my programming. I've never been formally diagnosed with anything. My mom was pretty staunchly like anti-Adderall as a kid. And I'm very fortunate. I feel fortunate that I think both my folks were like, our boy gets C's and that's what he gets. And we're not going to try to fuck with that. Which honestly, yeah, two thumbs up for that attitude. I don't know. These are just thoughts that I was born with. I don't know really where they came from. I don't know what it's a response to. It's probably a response to doing the natural schooling path when I think my brain chemistry probably would have benefited from something else at an early age. I'm not the type of kid that you can just force feed long division at 7:15 in the morning with no breakfast and 4 hours of sleep. Like, I don't know who that fucking works for, but it works the least for me. So maybe it was just a cumulative cognitive response to that, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And I'm kind of curious. It sounds like, you know, we're always on that mental health journey and those beliefs. To the best of your knowledge, what are the different factors, if you were put together, okay, here's my routine, or here are the things that I do that combat those more negative vibes? You know, what are the things you've mentioned, a bunch of things like sleep, the eating, exercise, mm-hmm. but do you have a program now that you follow that was like, I want to try to prevent myself from getting caught in that zone?
Yeah. I mean, I've discovered this recently. I'm married now. And I'm absolutely just like obsessed with my wife, and we go hiking all the time. We have a really cool, modest apartment that's like full of wood. There's not a lot of shit in it. There's very like minimal stuff. And I've sort of realized that like, oh, I can like actually program my perfect day. And if that includes like reading 20 pages of a book, listening to music while I clean the house, cooking dinner and having dinner with my wife, and spending an hour outside either hiking or swimming or whatever, then that's really all I need. And that is my perfect day. So whatever I can do in my professional career to maintain that status quo that I found, I feel like is my personal path to serenity. And that's just me meeting my goals. And I do feel euphoria. I feel bliss when I accomplish these things. And what's so funny is that I know these things and they're so easy and bare bones to accomplish. And still some days I choose to not do them. And I choose to scroll on fucking Instagram and TikTok and whatever the poison that is fucking all that shit. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm equipped with the knowledge to combat this. And still, you know, for whatever reason, probably because, you know, I release music and it's my job depends on it. But yeah, so it's kind of like those four things. It took me a long time to break it down. But I'm here now and I'm stoked as hell that I know about that.
And so you mentioned music, because one of the reasons why we talk to people who are musicians is that for a lot of people, music is the first time, whether they know it or not, that they begin to experience, process, understand feelings, and sometimes discover feelings. Mm-hmm. And usually cope. Is there any artist or song, album, genre that you find has been particularly useful for you in all of this, whether it's because it helps you understand something or it helps you cope?
You know what? I wish I could answer this easily, but a part of, I guess since we're talking about it, the way that my brain chemistry works is when you hand me the aux cord and Spotify, I get a blank screen in my brain. Music ceases to exist. I get really overwhelmed with the options of it all, and I actually get to a point where I actually haven't heard any music in my entire life. So I can't actually accurately point to an album that's helped me in this way. But I will say that my favorite piece of music of all time is Billy the Kid's Suite from the composer Aaron Copland. And it's essentially it's a classical music piece that's inspired by a lot of Americana and folk themes, detailing Billy the Kid's life as an outlaw. Obviously, it's a classical music piece. There's no lyrics. But the way that it makes me feel just emotionally, it's my one sort of mainstay that I know how this is going to make me feel every single time. And it's really introspective for me. It's really reflective to me. There's something about the outlaw story and the outcast story that really, I just think it's so beautiful. And it sort of paints a picture of the American West and the journey in such a vivid way. So I always go back to that over everything.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting, the idea of that connection with the outlaw, because on one level, a lot of us, when we have that glorified or glamorized view of an outlaw, we ignore all the things that might have gone that are problematic. But the core concept is very similar to what you've been talking about, is that there's something that's so appealing about someone who's just willing to go against the grain and venture out and do something different, facing danger. Now, oftentimes it's things that are very harmful to either themselves or others. So that part, but we kind of gloss over that at some point, but there is something so compelling about that. That's very similar to what you've been talking about. Just this idea of someone being willing to do things differently.
Yeah.
And it's really can grab us.
Well, Billy the Kid is an interesting example too, because it's the time of the Wild West. So it's literally just anarchy, you know what I mean? And lawlessness. And I think that while I was sort of in the shit world of regularity or whatever, I would have apocalypse fantasies. And I would watch movies like 28 Days Later and being like, oh fuck, I actually would weirdly be more relaxed in this setting and potentially be able to thrive. My only goal was to survive. I would fucking crush that. And interestingly enough, the thing that got me out of my thing was, parting with the $300, but it was also COVID, it was a week before COVID. The entire world broke down. And all of a sudden I had the mental clarity to be like, oh my God, I can totally navigate this. I see a path. And I did that in a time of complete, just that shit fucking blowing up, the normal shit.
During COVID, what felt more clear to you?
The lack of noise, the lack of periphery, the lack of extraneous stressors. I have a lyric in my song Model Train Town. It's just like, I felt relaxed and I felt guilty. And that was kind of that's kind of it. It's just like, oh, wow, the chatter has shut down. The world has shut down. The playing field has been leveled. Obviously not the socioeconomic, but big problems with that statement, but it's quiet. And everyone has the same goal now. And I can deal with that. I can deal with that. And I can actually thrive in that. I see a path because the noise is gone.
Yeah. And it's so amazing that we don't give ourselves permission to feel that way, just whatever the circumstance.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. I talked to so many people who are just like, oh God, COVID was the best. I talk to people like me who are like, COVID was the best. I wish we could go back to that life. It's like, dude, you can. We that's the thing. You can create that.
Yeah, because I had the same reaction to 28 Days Later. Obviously, that would be horrible in so many ways, but the simplicity of life, of just surviving and not becoming, I don't remember what they called them. They didn't call them walkers. They didn't call them zombies. What did they call them in 28 Days Later?
You know what?
Whatever it was, just the idea of trying it, there is something that's so appealing the simple nature of surviving. And then because if the simple nature of surviving comes up, the simple nature of thriving is somewhere along that path.
Yeah.
And you know, again, when I hear your story, that's a big part of humanistic approaches to therapy and psychology is just the idea that you want to clear the weeds away so that someone can actualize. And when I hear your story, that's what I'm hearing. Yeah. I'm hearing that somehow, you know, getting back to the concept of the yips, you somehow pulled away all of the noise and just figured out, okay, let me just sort of figure something different here. There's a path, and it sounds like you've been doing it, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. But you know, it presents itself. There are challenges that I face with you know, performing live. It's really tough for me being wired up. You know, talk about noise, talk about stimuli, just like a crowd and in-ear monitors and cymbals and like all this stuff. It's really, really hard for me to deal with and to feel a connection with the audience, which is the goal to be fulfilled as a live performer. I'm still reaching for that, and I still really, really struggle with it. And it's a chatter thing. It's a lot of chatter that just kind of fucks with me. But yeah, every year is a new year, and every show is a new show, and I'm aware of it. I'm working on it. Jeez, it's tough out there.
No, it is. Pete, thank you so much for sharing your story. This is really, really interesting stuff. We have never talked about the concept of the yips on the show, and I always remember that term being like, that's a cool term, but I never thought it'd be relevant professionally, quite frankly. But I think it's the way that you conceptualize it, the way that you kind of worked through it. I think it's really cool that you were able, because a lot of people can't cut through the noise.
Yeah, yeah. Well, best of luck to them, because it's tough.
Yeah, and listen, best of luck with your ongoing success, and thanks so much for coming on the podcast, and we hope we get a chance to talk to you again.
Yeah, thank you, man. Anytime. This was fun.
So there it is. Peter Martin of PDUSA talking about the yips and how he experienced barriers in thinking in the midst of his anxiety and depression. Now, there is so much to take away from the conversation with Pete. But one thing I wanted to follow up on was our discussion towards the end about the appeal of being an outlaw. One of the appeals of the image of an outlaw is the freedom from all the conventional barriers that may hold us back. Laws, norms, rules, maybe even the feelings of others. And that feeling of freedom can be liberating and intoxicating. But there's a downside. As we're feeling free and unburdened by the world around us, we may do things that are harmful to others and ourselves. And ultimately, the outlaw life has severe costs over time for everyone. Now, to me, this really goes hand in hand with the concept of the yips and how we handle our negative self-talk. Negative self-talk is often designed to protect us or warn us, something our bodies, our minds don't want us to feel, think, or do. Now, when we have a negative thought that makes us feel badly or constrains us in some way, it's tempting to dismiss that thought as crazy, irrational, or distorted. And if we dismiss, avoid, or suppress those thoughts, we may feel better for a time, just like the freedom of being an outlaw. And not getting pulled down by our negative thinking is important, but we need our negative thoughts to a degree. They give us safety and protection. And so I think the best way to examine negative thoughts is not to dismiss them, but rather to examine whether they have credibility, even if they're uncomfortable. And Pete and I discussed his initial self-limiting thoughts about his career, that he should pick a safer but less fulfilling path. Now, this is a reasonable concern. Music is a risky profession, even for the most talented and successful. And there may have been career paths that would have been less fulfilling but safer. But I think what he did was really useful, which he followed the logic of his thinking as it would play out in the real world. And he discovered that for him, the safe path wasn't really so safe. It wouldn't necessarily make him more money. It wouldn't necessarily lead to a safer life. So those negative thoughts were no longer functional for him. They didn't protect him. They just hindered him from a more fulfilling and lucrative career choice in music. And so he could then more confidently dismiss those thoughts as not being functional or consistent with his life goals. And I think that is a great overall model for dealing with negative thoughts that give us the yips. I want to thank Pete for this wonderful conversation. This season of Going There is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson, who believes that health is everything. Their strength in healthcare innovation empowers them to build a world where complex diseases are prevented, treated, and cured, where treatments are smarter and less invasive, and solutions are personal. Through their expertise in innovative medicine and medtech, they are uniquely positioned to innovate across the full spectrum of healthcare solutions today to deliver the breakthroughs of tomorrow and profoundly impact health for humanity. Learn more at www.jnj.com, at Janssen US, and at JNJINNOVMed on Twitter. And I, of course, want to thank Consequence Podcast Network and SoundMind Live for including me in this wonderful project. And thanks to Pete Wilson and the Rooks for letting us use their song, I Know. If you are struggling with anxiety, depression, or addiction and are looking for help, please call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration National Helpline at 1-800-622-4357. If you're thinking about harming yourself and want to seek help, please contact the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. You may also go to the Sound Mind Live and Consequence websites for more information. So be healthy, be safe, and be kind to yourself and others. See you next time at the crossroads.
Hey, Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Hello, and welcome to Long Time No See, the podcast. Each week, we'll be pairing two blindfolded comedians who've agreed to sit down with a mystery guest. I'll be putting them on the spot with a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Without further ado, please remove your blindfolds and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Michael.
Hi, Andrea.
I have to be honest with you, I am so relieved to see it's you.
Do you have any irrational fears? What's the worst fad you were into? Is there any job that you would be terrible at?
Underwater welder?
Don't say that about yourself.
Do you guys have any useless talents?
I kicked one of those delivery robots.
Got what? You kicked one?
Yelling. I kick those all the time.
They have names on them.
Good.
I can make smoke come out of my mouth with nothing.
Do it.
You want to see it?
What the f***? Are you a dragon?
Out now, Long Time No See the Podcast, Season 2. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.